Vigo's having to operate even more attackingly now. He really hits that one. Oh, that is just sensational from Luis Vigo. Goes for goal. Oh, what a goal. Hiratoshi Nakata with a scream.
Yeah, I guess we can kick off, man, like, if you guys are happy. Welcome to episode, I think, 15? I'm not sure. I've already lost track, which is quite sad. And we have Mr. Hurt by Football, Carlisle, CJ.
Well, we need to change this. That is every single time.
Change. We're going to change. It's sticking forever, man. And, sorry, I was just sipping some water. But and we have the analytics don himself. Mr. Addy, how's it going, Addy?
I'm all good.
So, guys, I guess we obviously start at the one point, right? The final. How did you find that? I guess I can. Let's stick with Mr. Analytics for a kickoff. I think he gets away with his opinions by just casting himself in the shadows. But let's go, Addy. What's your take on the final? How did you find it? And is that the best game of football you've ever seen?
Yeah. Okay. It's not the best game of football I've ever seen. That's a lie. That's cut straight away.
What?
But it's the best World Cup final I've ever seen. It's the best international tournament final I've ever seen. It's the best international tournament I've ever seen. Trust me, that World Cup was just crazy for me. It's probably been the best one.
Do you think it's the best one you'll ever see in your lifetime?
It'll take some beating. The stories that were in that, the different kind of like the time it is in the season, everything that's gone on behind the backdrop, all the political kind of issues in the lead up, then the player stories themselves. You have Messi playing said to be his final game for Argentina. You had Ronaldo coming off the back of that interview, but just him and Messi playing in what is potentially their last World Cups. Different players for different countries. You had Mbappe, the handing over of the torch. It's just, there's just so much going on in one World Cup. And the thing is, you got the games that you wanted to see. So it wasn't like all these stories and then it's some drab 1-1 draws and 1-0s. It's like goals, 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 goals as well. And drama. It was amazing. Like, 100%.
It picked up like towards, I mean, the nil-nils were getting annoying at the group stage. But as the tournament progressed, I think it like went into another gear, which was pretty nice to feel. And obviously the other great story was Morocco, right? Like the semi-final of first African team to do that, which was bloody awesome. Carlisle or CJ or Mr. Hurt by Football, what's give me your thoughts. How did you find that final? I know you didn't watch. Did you watch it?
I watched what I could, so it was more stressful than it needed to be. I didn't see everything. It didn't help that France didn't really turn up until about the 70th minute. Yep. But like we mentioned, credit to Deschamps for being brave enough to make changes when he did, starting at before half time. When you saw things weren't working. I guess that game showed why you can't write France off and essentially why they are where they are in terms of having won a World Cup before and being a pretty solid team. Like Ade said, so many stories this World Cup, so many stories. And I think we're at the age now we can appreciate it. Like, maybe even 10 years ago, the analytics and the level that analytics were at weren't the same that they are now. So it's a lot easier for the common person, so to speak, to be able to just understand a lot more about, the game. So like, I had a quick look at BBC earlier and they were saying this tournament has had the most number of upsets. So almost a quarter of the games were shocks.
Wow.
The last time it was that high was 1958 Sweden, where 26% of the games ended in an upset. This year it was 24. The last time there were almost this number of upsets, which were 14, would have been 2002.
That's crazy. That's actually crazy.
Fewer shots, more goals. So the accuracy was just up, just way up.
Yeah, I mean, referencing Ade's point on like the football we saw, I think the Athletic piece that was dropped in the group chat today basically said what, like 69% of the goals were from open play, which from the last four World Cups, including Qatar, has been the highest. And then I think corners was the lowest in the last four World Cups. So like 8% of the goals came from corners, which again, it was surprising to me given how, you know, recently we've been focusing on tactics and how set pieces are changing the way the game is being played. So yeah, quite interesting in terms of how the split open of, you know, goals essentially across the board. But Ade, I guess, coming back to you, do we now just end the debate on Messi? Like, is that basically it? We can just say game over, like the debate is over?
I think the debate's always been over, and I think the people who knew it already. I think everybody knew it already. I just think there's some people who just wanted to stick the knife in and try and draw it out and stuff, but it is definitely over. If it's over three times over now, because there's no way that anybody can say this is the ultimate achievement in a footballer's career. And Ronaldo, as much as he's won the Euros, you know, it's not the World Cup. And it's not just even about the fact that he's won it, because he's not kind of ridden on his team's coattails. It's been a mutual relationship where they've worked hard for him in the defensive phases, and he's literally turned up when he's needed to turn up, in the games he's needed to turn up, and won the tournament for them and with them. Taking the first penalty as coolly as you like, calming everybody down. There's no debate. I mean, sorry,
the penalty he took in the shootout, I feel that was just, I don't think he's human. Like, you don't do that at the final of a penalty shoot. He literally just walked up and just passed it in the left corner. I was just like,
ice cold.
This guy is different. Like, ice cold. Like, I was like, who has the balls to do that?
The thing is, he knew the significance.
Exactly.
Of setting the tone calmly. He knew the significance of, I take this penalty and I look like it's a walk in the park. I've calmed all those players down, because, do you know what I mean? They would have been so nervous if he had missed.
He took the first penalty, right? Argentina had to take the first one. I think John, who is in the background, he said this during the chat. He's like, the best penalty takers went up first, which was not what we saw or what we expected. A good example is Neymar, who didn't even step up. Maybe he was injured. But maybe teams actually have to take their first penalty, their best penalty takers first, CJ. Like,
I just think it's a dumb logic, right? Because what you're assuming is the people that aren't as good are going to make their penalties. So then the best people at taking penalties can make their penalties, so you win. How has that become logic? It doesn't make sense, right? Like, I can't think of anywhere else in the world where it's like, okay, it's come down to like essentially such a fine line between skill and luck, but I'm not going to put my best foot forward. I'm going to wait, maybe just see if I can fudge it, and then I'm going to put my best foot forward. It doesn't make sense to me why or how you do that. And I know there's lots of stats which are like, it doesn't matter which team goes first and stuff like that. But for me, if you know your players can take a penalty, you get the players that are the best at taking them to take them. There's no, oh, let's wait to see if we get to fourth or fifth. If your first three players miss all their pens, you're out.
And that's kind of what we saw even in the tournament. Like, there's multiple shootouts. Like, people just missed penalties. I need to look into the data, like, what actually, like, how many percentage of penalty kicks were missed, because it seemed a lot more this time for some reason. I have to say a commendable penalty as well by Dybala. Like, he played, like, I think 8 minutes the whole World Cup, and then came off the bench, banged it, no problems. I think that was pretty cool. And like you said, CJ, like, actually picking your best penalty takers makes a difference, as you can tell. I think going back to Ade, are we happy to say Mbappe is taking over the torch after that performance? I mean, a hat-trick in a World Cup final and now, unfortunately, not even winning it. But, I mean, surely now he's the next in line, right? Or would you...
No, I'll probably agree with that. I think there's not many players that are going to... It will take somebody coming out of the blue and just turning into a consistent monster to really take Mbappe off. If you look at his numbers, what he's done at his age, and to be fair, from the time you saw him in Monaco, you knew that he was going to be something special, if that makes sense. So I think it's definitely been passed on to him. I think there's still this debate about him and Haaland, but the same thing as we see, and the reason why I believe Messi is a better player than Ronaldo, and he's the GOAT, is that football ability, all-round ability to influence a game, Mbappe has more than any other player out there, especially when it compares to Haaland. Haaland's a good goal-getter, but... So, yeah, I think it's his to lose, but he needs to do it for another 5, 6, 7 seasons before we start comparing him to the man who won the World Cup.
I mean, he's still got... He's 24 on, well, tomorrow, but he's essentially got the potential to play in another 3 or 4 World Cups if we look at how athletes are, like, you know, the way, like, Ronaldo and Messi have kind of, like, regenerated that kind of expectation in terms of age. But apart from Mbappe and Haaland, CJ, anyone else that's on your radar in terms of the next gen or who you...
This is what I was going to say. I'm not actually sure. And it's weird, right? I think it also highlights how consistent Messi and Ronaldo have been for so long. Because how many people have come and gone in that time?
Flash in the pans,
that
right?
Are good, but they've been flashing the pans, right? So I think it's hard... Realistically, I say, ask me this question again in a year. Because I think now it's too hard to say. Because even Mbappe, right? We know about him because he played in the last World Cup final. Like, he played in the last World Cup. So it's not kind of a... He's up and coming in that regard. It's, we knew about him. He's just delivered slash is delivering on the potential we all knew he had. Haaland as well has been a freak for so long. Well, freak in the nicest sense of the term. We've all known about him, you know, how his dad basically was taking him touring around everywhere. Where do you want to go and develop, et cetera, et cetera. So ask me in a year, because I actually don't know right now. I don't know. Rain check.
We can bring in when we get him on the actual video podcast that we can do, we can bring up Maz, because apparently he compared Mbappe to Owen, which I think was ridiculous. So I'm going to hold that.
I got his point. But I wouldn't make that point, if that makes sense.
I have nothing else to say, but...
You know what? Yeah, sorry. To give him... I understand where he's coming from in terms of, if you think about what Owen's main characteristics were when he burst on the scene... But I don't think I think football now has developed since when Owen was a youngster. So yeah, I can understand because of the pace and finishing ability.
Yeah, and that's where it ends, right? Yeah. Yeah. Because the game itself has changed so much from, you know, you just being able to be fast, or you just being big, or being able to hit the ball, that on that one dimensional aspect, yes, there's parallels, but could you see Owen doing what Mbappe did yesterday? No.
And therein lies the debate. So, we're going to pull him up.
You could just put it down to English players and choking when the pressure's on. And there's a long and storied history of that. So, yeah.
I mean, it's a good good point. I mean, we'll probably touch on that very shortly. But, I mean, we've seen, like, the teams of the tournament. Are there any surprises from you, Ade? Like, I'm looking at Sky Sports' team of the tournament. I'm a bit... question mark on their striker, who they've selected as Giroud, you know, weirdly. Messi's there, Mbappe's there, obviously, Griezmann, Amrabat, Unahi, Hakimi as a right back, and then Vardiol, Croatian guy, Harry Maguire and Acuna, and then the Croatian keeper as well. But anyone else that's, like, surprised?
Like,
Maguire shouldn't be there.
There are 20 more defenders. There's this guy for Australia, Harry Suter. He should be there before Maguire, because he was immense in every game that he played for the same type of attributes that Maguire had. You've got Romero, Otamendi, who got to the final. You've got who else? I can't remember who the Moroccan centre-back was. Was it Romain Saïss?
Saïss was decent, correct? As well, yeah.
Saïss, yeah. And I honestly reckon if he was fit, it would have been a completely different game against France.
He got injured.
Of course, yeah. Should have, could have, would have, but yeah.
So I don't get how Maguire makes it in there. That's the first thing that I'm going to say is a travesty. There's other younger players that I think potentially should have got in there. Like they've gone Mbappe, Messi, Giroud, but Saka?
Saka made the bench for the Sky team.
Does Saka not have a better tournament than Giroud? I mean, for me, he does.
He has. I get the logic weirdly in that he's the glue that kind of allows the other people around him to perform better. And whilst that is an underrated aspect, I would not put him in the team for that alone.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because in terms of like an out-and-out striker, yeah, no, I'd even put Ramos there instead of him.
Just because of the...
And Ramos literally had that one game where he was on smoke. So, yeah.
I mean, Saka made the L'Equipe team of the tournament, which, you know, they're really harsh. So, I mean, they've got Saka, Messi and Mbappe up front. Common theme, here you go, Roman Saiz, as you guys mentioned, Amrabat, Fernandes and Modric. And then Hakimi, Bardiol and Acuna as well. Livakovic as a keeper. So common themes there, but yeah, surprising with like Giroud coming into the fall. I don't know, with his performance in the final, I think he should not even be mentioned, in my opinion. But he had a...
He's only mentioned though because...
But he had a... I don't know. He had an okay tournament, I think. I mean, given the fact that he enabled everyone else, but Griezmann did as well. So multiple people, I think we can skip over. But I'm keen to get on your next phase of the conversation. That's what I wanted to segue onto, Ade. I'm going to let you take the stand here or the floor, which way you want to put it, and share your hot take. And then we can have a quick convo about that. And then CJ, you can go next. So Ade, what is the hot take?
Cheers. Well, the hot take for me is that basically, I was just so impressed with Didier Deschamps' management of the game, despite France losing. And I genuinely believe that that is the difference between a manager like Didier Deschamps, who's won what he's won and gotten to the final again, and a Gareth Southgate. And that's probably the reason why Gareth Southgate has hit a ceiling with England, and probably should have left after this tournament. I've never really been a huge Southgate fan, but I can respect the achievements that he's made up until this point, getting England so far in so many tournaments and kind of making them look a little bit better. But I think to make a point and kind of a comparison, I think England were how Arsenal, I don't want to jinx anything, but were how Arsenal were just before Unai Emery came, in the sense that they needed somebody who was going to try and change a little bit and start the change that they needed to make to get towards the top, start to give them a little bit of belief in themselves that, okay, we can go in a different direction here. And now they need to change to another manager. I'm not going to say this is what Arteta has done, but to another manager who's now going to break them through that ceiling, who has an ability to tactically coach them at that higher level, but then also make big decisions when they count. Southgate has always been a pragmatic manager. So you look at the England game, who he threw on for substitutes and who he even started with. It doesn't speak to somebody who knows how to manage players when they're on form and how to fit people into a team and still make them feel a part of it. I think in our chat earlier, someone said he tries to be everybody's friend, and I totally agree with that. He really tries to keep
people
happy
guy.
More than be ruthless and win. Yeah. And he wants to be liked by everybody. And I think, you know, these things are hangovers from his Euro 96 and penalty miss. One, the pragmatism he shows so that they, you know, don't lose and don't get embarrassed. But two, how much he wants to be liked, because he was hated by a lot of people after missing that penalty and ridiculed for it. So I think for me, Deschamps' ability in that game where he threw on two people, any manager that takes off in a World Cup final, two players before half time, one of them being someone who's just literally about to make the golden boot, probably not going to play in another World Cup again. That shows you, I'm about this win in life and I'm going to make those decisions. And you saw visibly on the pitch how rattled the changes made Argentina. They came back into the game. and they literally had to wrestle the World Cup of France. And that's what you need at that level. A manager who's, I'd rather go home crying and get spanked 6-1, knowing that I tried and threw everything at it, than play Trippier left back so I don't concede.
That's a good point. And then Trippier left back, you know, we'll get into that debate.
I know, I said that's a good
one. But even, I mean, with the tactical stuff, like even Scaloni, like the Argentinian guy, like the fact that he went brave, you know, 4-3-3 in a World Cup final when I think the last couple of games he was playing 4-4-2, then 3-5-2 versus Netherlands. So he has that nous, and I didn't expect that. And like you said, it's kind of shows that what you need on the bench in terms of someone to think about, you know, not drastically changing your game, but at least tweaking it to a certain way to who you're playing. So, yeah, it's very interesting what you put up. You were saying, sorry?
Yeah. I think also, too, with Scaloni, the fact that he knows his defenders aren't the quickest on the ground and he's playing against Dembele and Mbappe, there's all the threat of a counter-attack. But what he did in that game was say, we're going to squeeze you so far up the pitch that you're not going to be able to even get into the transitions, and we're going to be nasty to play against and keep the ball. Argentina were all over France. France could not get out in the first half. And I thought that was equally as brave from Scaloni. So that, and you can see that it's a tactical battle as well as the players on the pitch making it and actually an entertaining battle for us to watch. The managers are working overtime, doing things that they're not just making up the numbers on the side and saying, go out and play. They're actually doing things to impact the game. And that's what you need. At that level of management, that's what you need. Someone who's brave, someone who doesn't care if he's going to come home to public opinion. That's really what it is. And I think that's what England need now. Someone who's not going to care what the media are going to destroy their life if they get battered in a World Cup final, if they're trying to win it and they think they're doing the right thing for the team who's at that top level. So
I like it.
I don't know what you guys
think. I mean, I'll pass it over, obviously, to CJ, who can be your agreement. I think he's going to agree. But CJ, as part of your feedback to that point, is there a way that you can actually hire a manager that isn't English?
Well, this is a $1 million question, right? Ultimately, we always get this nonsense about one of us. It's got to be one of us. I'd just like us to pause for a minute and think about the last Englishman we knew that won anything of note.
I can't think of anyone apart from... What is the reference in the group chat? Was it Bobby Robson?
Nah, I think the last person to win something was Steve McClaren, and that was either 2004 or 2008 when Middlesbrough won the Carling Cup, as it was known then.
Whoa.
And I'm going to get stick for saying this, but I'm going to say anyway, England in terms of football do not know how to win. We do not have what it takes to win. So hiring, and this is nothing against Southgate, but we have to judge a man by the stripes he's earned, right? He's most famous for, apart from the Pizza Hut advert, missing a penalty in 1996.
Jeez, pizza advert.
And that's not to be harsh, just he hasn't been part of a winning team.
Another reference John has put in as an English manager to win something of note was Harry Redknapp. Was that with...
FA Cup? I'm guessing it would have been probably FA Cup.
I'm just gonna,
and that would have been at Portsmouth. It wouldn't have been Spurs, because Spurs don't win anything. Yes, that's me getting ready for football to kick off again from next week. But that this is the problem ultimately, right, is... English football culture, it doesn't breed winners. I remember we had this conversation in the group chat where I was like, oh, but surely England have got more winners in the, like, in the team than you'd think. And then someone else was like, actually, no, because barely of them have actually won anything of note. You look at most other teams in the World Cup that progressed and got quite far. And, okay, obviously I can't speak on Morocco. I don't know what the Moroccan players have. I don't know that. But most of the players that would have been in that final have been in the mud at some stage and then turned it around to win. France were asleep for the best part of two-thirds of that game and suddenly decided with 20 minutes left, actually, you know what, if we're going to go out, at least we'll go out holding our heads high, because they looked completely drunk for at least two-thirds of the match.
But it's funny, man. Like, you just mentioned,
it was bad.
As you go back to Southgate, what has he won in his career as a manager or player?
I remember Deschamps won the World Cup. He won the, as a player, he won the World Cup as a manager in 2018. So I think if you're looking for inspiration as a player, or you're like, shit, things are not going to plan, you look at the bench. The manager's there looking at you like, bruv, we win here. We don't tolerate losing. The tweet that you put in the other day, was it by James Bench? Where he basically argued that, ignoring the fact that France are missing five of their starting lineup, the argument was, but we played well, we were unlucky to lose, ergo, let's keep Southgate there. Now, I don't feel type of way about sacking Southgate or letting him go, but that's more because I don't know who'd replace him with. I don't see anyone in international football. Tuchel wouldn't manage us just in case we had to play against Germany and then lose. It just wouldn't work. The man would have to get another visa and stay over here permanently. He'd never be welcome back in Germany. So that just wouldn't happen. But no one, like, the England squad really doesn't know how to win when it comes down to it. Against France, France showed exactly why, even if they were at times outplayed or second best, they won, we didn't. And ultimately, that's what it comes down to, right?
There's a common theme here. I think, Ade, we all agree with your point. I think there's a lack of ruthlessness in just the setup. Like, it goes down to the tactics. It goes down to team selection. Yeah. It goes down to what you need them to deliver and being that nice guy and leaving Harry Maguire to play on. Like, that's what's lacking.
Yeah. It's... Maguire should have never made this team. If we're trying to talk about progressing the type of football that we're playing as a country, should have been Tomori, because then you're starting to bed him in. So when the new cycle is happening, it's okay. Look how many young bloods France put on in that match. And they did not miss a step. And they're kids.
I agree, man.
And if Deschamps brave enough to do that in a World Cup final, literally, your nuts are on the chopping block. Final. We won't even do that for the year. Yeah, no, we're dead food. This is why we don't get anywhere, right? Because when you should take those risks, you don't. Which means then when you take those risks, it's a lot more high pressure. If something goes wrong, it's too easy to blame the players for not being mentally strong enough to, you know, succeed in that high pressure environment. But it doesn't need to always be high pressure. Some of the kids that he brought on, he'd been slowly blooding throughout the tournament. Even if it was 5 minutes here, 10 minutes there.
Who knew about Kolo Muani before this tournament?
Nobody. I had no
clue. And he...
Yeah. One of my friends did, and he was like, oh, I'm glad that, you know, he's playing. I was like, I've never heard of this guy. I have no qualms about admitting my ignorance with some of the players
He changed the game twice. I think he was in the semi-final and then even the final when he came on. He was just like another threat to deal with off the wing, which is just... And he's 25 as well, so not like a young guy, but just hasn't had the experience internationally.
The thing about it is that this... I totally agree, 100%. You take the risks and you need to start blooding young people in. I mean, how long have we cried for Bellingham to be part of the team? How long have we cried for James Maddison to be a part of the team? These players who are playing really well at club level, doing what they need to do, and they're still not getting in. And the thing is, what Southgate doesn't understand is that pragmatic approach. It cascades down the footballing pyramid in England, because you bring a Harry Maguire who's played 5 minutes for his club and a Calvin Phillips who's played 5 minutes for his club. What does that say to all the other young English players that are trying to get into this team and compete and join? What does Maddison scoring so many goals and still not starting or touching the pitch It says that the manager's not rewarding the right things. The manager's not rewarding that. The thing about Deschamps, if you're banging, your form's banging for your club, more time you'll see him, the players in the team, in the France team. And then we'll say, oh, they've got a rich fountain of talent. No, they're just picking the players who are playing really well and who are really striving to get into the team. Saliba was in the team. Okay, he didn't start, but he's playing well. He's the centre-back they took. You can see he doesn't... If you're good, if you're playing well, you're good enough, you make the team.
You get to come on even before the halftime whistle in the World Cup final. That's what you get.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So, like, I think we're all in agreement. He's too pragmatic, but I think his selections now, we've gone three tournaments deep or so, however many with him, and the fact he's sticking by this group of players is now going to probably start to have a detrimental effect on the core of English football unless he just decides, okay, I'm staying on, but I'm going to shake things up.
But the problem is now, right? He'll shake things up so much. Inevitably, all we're going to hear for the next year will be, oh, they're not ready, they're not ready, they're not ready. Or have they been tested yet? Will they crumble in the face of adversity? The fact is, this team should have been getting rebuilt slowly over time. Maguire shouldn't be in this team. The fact that there is no alternative to Kane is a huge indictment on the lack of striking options that we have in this country.
And they are strikers. They just haven't been bedded in. So then when they come in, they're like, oh, why aren't you performing? Well, I haven't played with this team for 5-6 years, and then it's too late.
But like, and this is, again, I'm not digging these people out because they are better players than me. I don't play ball. Callum Wilson, I don't think internationally is it.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's a lovely guy. I just don't see him coming on as a sub when Kane's not doing anything and scoring. Don't see it. Tony, he's unproven. I really can't think of anyone else.
Abraham probably is the only other one that can stick out and say, well, yeah.
But the problem is what England are doing now is we're doing what the rugby team used to do for England, which was if you don't play in England, we're not playing you. So loads of players, fly halves, centres, forwards, went to France to get more money, whatever, and just didn't get picked for the England squad.
Yeah.
Essentially, that's what we've done. Tomori and Abraham, even Smalling, I completely forgot about this. Chris Smalling has completely... Okay, we talk about redemption arcs, and I've been saying for ages we've been pushing a narrative of Maguire coming back a new man from this. Smalling's gone to
Roma
and quietly gone about his business and is a very, very good defender.
We had this talk when the squad came out. I think Ade was on with Maz, and we did say Smalling should have been in the conversation somewhere.
It's just one of those.
So there's players that get ignored, and we're at that stage now where it's, oh, it's favouritism, and then what's favouritism got you? Nothing.
I think that thing about Harry Kane you said is so vital as well. I think the way the nation relies on this guy...
And referees too.
I was thinking about, you know, what do we, by speaking to my friend who's a Tottenham fan, I was like, you better just hope this doesn't break Harry Kane, because how much reliance they've placed on Harry Kane, whether at Tottenham, whether at England level, all of this, if he has like the post PTSD from missing that penalty, which it wouldn't be irregular for him to have, there's a lot of people that are going to miss out, and there is no contingency plan for Harry Kane, and nobody's been given a chance. Nobody's going to be thinking, okay, cool, I can step up. No one's been given the experience and drip fed to become the next, like all other countries have done. It's going to be mad, because we've been relying on a Harry Kane who's damn near 29. He's not going to be pretty much firing at the next tournament. And who do you replace him with? We still haven't replaced the number two for Harry Kane since Vardy decided to retire from international football. So I think that's a massive problem position for England coming up, because a blunt attack. And if Rashford doesn't seem like the type of striker who's going to move in there and be able to bring others into the game and be an all-action centre forward, and with the emergence of the need for a striker who's going to put the ball in the back of the net and be multifaceted in terms of playing a game. I think that's going to be a big, and that'll be an issue. And it will just move from being, oh, we couldn't control the game in midfield, to now we're a blunt object. So, yeah.
The other point of this Harry Kane thing is like he drops in, right? So even when you play him in the next World Cup and he's 33, he's not going to have the same running power, no chance. So already there's an issue on the horizon. You'll have to change the way you play tactically, which doesn't...
Funnily enough, I think that might be the best performance he'll ever have for England, because he won't be able to run up and down and he will have to actually focus on striking.
But this is the thing, you have to change tactically, and then we just touched on Southgate. He doesn't have that tactical nous. He doesn't have it. So how is he going to tweak the system again with younger players and Harry Kane centre forward, and then you're going to be like panicking, put Trippier in centre mid, why not? At 38.
I completely agree. The problem is obviously with England, we set up to minimise players' weaknesses rather than play to players' strengths. And until that changes, it's always going to be the same thing. But France know that Mbappe isn't going to trap back, but they still play Mbappe in such a way.
Rabiot was covering him every time. Rabiot was there on the left, and then you have Hernandez. So they know how to move about. That's the difference, man. Like, I guess CJ, I think this is a good move to your hot take in terms of positional play. So I'll give you the stand or the floor, so to say, and then we can shift over to the quiz straight after.
Yeah, so this one's a bit more of a discussion because I'm not really sure how to phrase it as such, but I feel that this World Cup, we've kind of not quite gone full circle, but we've had to remember and to have an appreciation for some traditional roles on the football pitch. Like, it's not been in vogue to be have a traditional number nine for how many years now? How many World Cup cycles since probably Spain won it? Wait, Spain World Cup? Or was it Euros? It was
Euros when Fabregas was like false nine.
Yeah, false nine. But like you said, we saw in the Spain-Germany game when they both brought on strikers, they both scored. Morocco, when they played France, ultimately it came down to them not being able to finish chances that they made. They had enough of them. There wasn't someone clinical enough to score. In terms of defenders, and we touched on this a bit earlier in terms of Maguire, he doesn't do enough as a defender to warrant him playing. And I really promise this isn't that I hate Harry Maguire pod, but if you look at him compared to Guardiola, both central defenders, one was a lot more dominant in the air, because I'm still mad at Stones and Maguire for the fact that Giroud scored a header past them. Like, your Premier League defenders, bread and butter of the Premier League is not getting beaten in the air as a central defender. And you're letting Giroud sneak past you. As good as Giroud is in the air, unforgivable. So I kind of feel that maybe some traditional roles, Di Maria absolutely just desecrating what the man previously known as Koundé. I feel like he's now like the artist formerly known as Prince, the centre-back formerly known as Koundé. Because...
God damn.
Remember what's funny about that is we were saying before the France game, I was like, we spoke once, we said he's a centre-back playing right-back.
Yeah. He got absolutely... Like, and then, that winger debate, it was the one I think was most favourite from what you pointed out for me. Like, how a traditional winger with quality can just change the way you attack completely. It just opens up everything.
Yeah, and ultimately, I know we try to be smart with formations or, you know, JDP, or, you know, like tactics this and pressing this and switching play to this side and that side. But ultimately, it's going to come down to basic fundamentals of football, ultimately. Sometimes it's just about being a fast winger. Sometimes it's just about being a clinical striker. Sometimes it's just about being a defender that's good both defensively and offensively in terms of aerial prowess. Lest we forget, Guardiola should have also had a penalty in the Morocco game where he was fouled when he went on a mazy run. So, you know, like I just think maybe this World Cup has kind of shown that certain positions that we thought maybe weren't in vogue anymore or weren't needed actually still have quite a role left to play.
I mean, you've got the right person on. Ade, what are your thoughts on that? Any standout performers in terms of a positional sense to, you know, go against that debate, or are you in full agreement?
I think I am in agreement. I think it was just interesting to see how teams approach the tournament and the way they played certain players in certain matches. I think to the point, different positions are always going to be needed across the pitch. We talk about this thing, like, for example, the fact that number 10s and number 9s have disappeared for the game. But the reality is, in certain matches, those people are going to be needed because those players can exploit spaces that other people can't. Or looking at a traditional, you know, winger who's going to beat somebody out on the outside, like what Di Maria could do, and actually take somebody on rather than being an inside forward. There's always a space for somebody who plays in certain positions. However much, you just have to find teams that use them in the systems. Because the main one for me is the number 10. I mean, I think to be honest, Messi wasn't playing a centre forward this tournament. He was playing a number 10 with wingers who could come in either side of him and play as strikers, who were just prepared to run the extra mile and just run at defenders and basically take people out of the game. So Messi had all the space he needed to do, but he was
and he was dropping down as well to like center mid sometimes to work with Fernandes.
Exactly. So for me, he wasn't an advanced forward. So that tells me that if you have the player who can play that position and they're going to have a significant impact on the team's success, you will accommodate those players. So it's one of those for me. I kind of agree, but I think there's space for every position in the game. It's just, it depends on the setup. But I do want to reference the Koundé point though, because I think everyone's been a bit harsh on Koundé. He's ultimately a centre-back who's being asked to play right-back. And right-back in the world of football now is a position that is almost the midfielder's position now. And I think they did it for defensive solidity, but didn't realize that that's going to expose him, because the space you have as a centre-back and how you see the game and the fact that you can turn left and right and have options versus being a right-back and you have literally your left option or outside the pitch, I think it's a bit difficult. So I just want to give a shout-out to Koundé, because he's been roasted in every group that I'm in every setting, and I think it's a bit harsh.
Brother, I went to the shops 10 times.
It's not his fault. I completely agree. It's not his fault, okay? Like, what you're saying is absolutely true. But like you were saying, right, it's about setting up a team not to minimise weaknesses, but to minimise strengths. So the whole point of him being there, obviously, was so they were more defensively solid. So going forward, they'd be better, right? But then it comes to when you're playing against them, how you choose to try and negate that. For instance, I thought we gave Mbappe way too much respect in the when we played him, especially in like the first half. Now, if you look at how both Argentina and Morocco played against France with Mbappe on that wing, what they did was they both, regardless of whatever he can or can't do, they still attacked down that side, because their whole thing was, okay, cool, we know what you can do. Can you deal with what we can do? And it's funny, because we say this in the Premier League all the time, don't we, about players being able to, you know, win their one-on-one battles, or it coming down to who's technically superior in that position based on the passing combinations they can have around a certain part of the pitch or the players that are next to them they can play with, right? So why would it be any different in the World Cup? Admittedly, okay, you guys haven't been around as much to gel, but by taking the fight to Mbappe, it pushed him back. Or he wasn't in the game because he wasn't getting the ball and being able to do what he wanted to do. So, again, and this isn't the I Hate Southgate pod either, but, yeah, it says a lot about mindset and how you go about setting up a team.
Very interesting debate. I like it. But, yeah, I mean, to round that off, I just, yeah, I think with positional play, I think like Ade said, I think you need players who are essentially these Swiss Army knives that can do multiple jobs. So in that way, even though they have a speciality, another good player who did this was Griezmann, right? So even though he was the traditional attacking mid, number 10, he was dropping in, he was doing what Messi was doing essentially, playing with Rabiot and what's his name? Who else was centre mid in France? I keep forgetting his name.
Tchouaméni. I'm probably saying it really bad.
Yeah. No. So he was dropping in to help them, and then they were helping progress play up towards Mbappe that way. That was their tactic, right? Because all three, as much as I don't rate Rabiot, all three of those midfielders were like technically secure. So yeah, you just need to find the right players to kind of do the Swiss Army knife job and kind of fit in somewhere, but more importantly, contribute towards your game plan or executing the game plan. Otherwise, you get the Mesut Ozil, who has one dimension and one attack on the day, amazing player, but doesn't contribute anything other than that. And it's very easy to stop in terms of a defending point of view. Okay, I guess we wrap up if we're all happy with that. I think we can jump on the quiz if we're ready. And it's obviously World Cup focused, as you'd expect. So, as the champion from the video podcast, actually won a quiz for the first time, Carlisle, I'll let you go first as to pick your poison. So you have truth or false, multiple choice, and bang on the head. What are you going for?
True or false.
It goes for true or false. Your question is, did Mbappe and Messi tie on goals and assists contributed at the World Cup?
Sorry, I'm going to say no.
That is false. They both contributed the same amount of goals and assists throughout the whole World Cup. But Mbappe scored more goals. So, sorry about that. 0 points. Ade, choose your poison.
Bang on the head, please.
Oh. He's going with the three-pointer. Okay. Which English footballer held the record for scoring a hat-trick in a World Cup final before Mbappe?
So Jeff Hurst.
Jesus, already.
See, yeah, I knew that one.
3 points. Very nice. Okay, CJ, you're next. What's your next topic? You have
multiple choice.
So your multiple choice question is, who created more chances in the World Cup out of these players? Cody Gakpo, Di Maria, Eriksen, or Theo Hernandez? Who created the most chances out of these players? Gakpo, Di Maria.
Gakpo, Eriksen, Theo Hernandez, and Di Maria.
Very marginal, I will say.
I'm going to go with Gakpo. Probably wrong.
Yes, you were wrong. Sorry, mate. Gakpo created 10, Di Maria 10, Eriksen 9. Theo Hernandez was the leader out of those four with 11. Literally one more than Gakpo. But a decent shout. 0 points. Sorry, mate. Ade, poison, please.
Multiple choice.
Multiple choice. Your question is, who had the most shots towards goal out of these players at the World Cup? Ivan Perisic, Dani Olmo, Serge Gnabry, or your best friend, Misturo, or what did you call it? Mistaro Martinez.
Misandro. Misandro
Martinez. So you have Perisic, Dani Olmo, Gnabry, and Martinez. Who had the most shots towards goal? You're going with Dani Olmo? That is incorrect. Yeah. Your correct answer was Ivan Perisic with 16. Dani Olmo had 12, Gnabry 12, and your boy, Mistaro Martinez, was 14 shots, so second highest. And he didn't score. I think he scored a penalty.
The less said about him, the better, yeah, because...
I'm still backing him.
On the biggest stage, no.
Oh, man. Hilarious.
We need to do an actual pod properly on, like, stock rising and stock falling correctly, because some players have definitely fumbled the bag in ways that... Yeah, it's going to be a sticky January or summer transfer.
I think we can do it for, like, overrated 11. Like, I think that's on the horizon for the next video pod, which we can do next month. So we can...
Yeah, definitely.
World Cup. CJ, you've got a chance to pull level here on the last question, which is your bang on the head. Can you give me the year Argentina won the World Cup before 2022 for 3 points?
1986.
Level. Wow. 3 points. Ade, you have a true or false to win in the final minute, if I'm not mistaken. So, to win the quiz, Ade, your question is, Sofiane Boufal had the highest number of take-ons from an African team in the World Cup. Is this true or is this false? Yikes. He has missed the chance.
False.
Sofiane Boufal had the highest take-ons by any African player.
Yep.
He had 14 take-ons. Just for Maz's reference, because Mbappe apparently isn't rated highly. Mbappe was top of the list with 25 take-ons in the entire World Cup. And he succeeded, obviously, in each and every one of them. Hence, they call the take-on. But yeah, Boufal was the highest African with 14 in the World Cup. So, for the first time ever, I think there's a draw here. CJ, you didn't lose, which is great. So now you're on form and you keep your crown as a quiz champion, as so does Ade. Well done, both of you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
You want a tiebreaker? I'm going to bring one up right now. Let me just quickly find. I knew exactly what I was going to find. Give me 1 second and we'll do a tiebreaker. Right, here we go. Loading up. I should have prepared for a tiebreaker. This should be easy. All right. What can we go with? Right. This should be pretty. Yeah, this should be all right. So I guess you guys get to choose your answer, and it's going to be pretty open. So you just need to shout out whoever you think is the answer to this. So can you give me the goalkeeper in the World Cup who you think has had the most saves in total? You need to just give me a name.
Gonna butcher it, Livaco, the Croatian keeper.
You're going for Livakovic, and Ade, your call is?
Wow, I really said his name wrong, yeah.
Most saves in the World Cup.
The most saves.
This is to win, remember, yeah.
Yeah, I know. I'm just trying to think if he was in the World Cup now. He had a lot of shots faced. I mean, it's got to be Livakovic. He's taking it, but I can't guess the same thing.
You can. I can find it. Bono. If you want.
I'm going to say Bono.
You're going with Bono. Ah, man, sorry, dude. Carlisle actually won that. You had it. You both had it. I think it was a bad question for my part, but Livakovic had 25.
No, that's cool. I had to guess something else. Of course it was Livakovic because I know he was going crazy. So, but
Chesney was second with like two saves less. So 23 he had and Livakovic had 25. Not bad. No, well, not champion bad CJ continues just about somehow. Recorded on.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, guys. I appreciate your time and let's catch up next week if possible. But have a great day and a week and appreciate it.
You too. Thanks, take care.
Bye-bye.
See you.
Vigo's having to operate even more attackingly now. He really hits that one. Oh, that is just sensational from Luis Vigo.